WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint, where power and politics collide and the tough questions get asked and answered.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. Today, a one-on-one interview with the mayor of Charlotte, Vi Lyles, juggling a lot these days, from crime to funding public transportation. The mayor is in the hot seat about the best way to guide this rapidly growing city. Joining us now, the mayor of Charlotte, Vi Lyles. Mayor, welcome back to Flashpoint. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben, for having me this morning.
This past week, CATS started hosting a series of public meetings on the Red Line. Of course, it's the commuter line that would stretch from uptown up to Mooresville. Granted, this is a big step, these public meetings, but after 20 years, taxpayers are understandably skeptical. Do you have a renewed confidence that this project is going to get off the ground?
And that is a great question, because I do believe that the people in the northern part of Mecklenburg County, especially in our towns, when we approved the half-cent sales tax, they thought they were going to get this line. And here we are decades later talking about this. So I am enthusiastic about the concept that we can make this happen this time. Now, there's a lot of runway that we're going to have to take to get to this point. But the thing that has really helped me understand is working with all of the mayors in Mecklenburg County, having them understand and be informed completely about what we're trying to accomplish as a region. And what we want to do is provide the kind of opportunities for mobility that lead to great economic development and better housing. So I'm working, and I am very excited about this idea that we are working now with all of the region, and we're working as well with Norfolk Southern. So step by step, that's what we do.
The sticking point with Norfolk Southern is that the city wants to use their line. And in the past, Norfolk Southern was not interested, and evidently they've expressed a more openness to it. Does it still stand? I mean, are they still open to working with the city?
We've had the opportunity to work with Norfolk Southern. I've had the CEO and the development VP in the office and talking about this over an extended amount of time. So I believe that what we would try to accomplish is to make sure that we have the track that's necessary to serve the city and the region and all of those towns. We would just have all of that come together. But I also realize that, you know, track is important to any entity that's in the railroad business. So those discussions and a lot of our public meetings are about what can we do to make sure that the track works for everyone.
Recently, council members, a few of them, proposed using the hotel tourism tax to pay for transit projects. The tourism industry pushed back, and pushed back hard. For the record, your stance on this?
Well, I believe that when you make a commitment and you tell people that you're going to use money a certain way, and they say that we're going to help you accomplish that, that we keep in our trust. And so earlier, I think that people, the thing about it, I don't think that the council members were really thinking about, well, what does this mean for the hospitality industry, as much as they were thinking, how do I get more money in Charlotte to make it possible for us to build our infrastructure, which we are really in need of. But I think that the method should be that we have to tax our people and not tax specific industries just because there's a pool of money available.
And what should that money be used for? I mean, I know it's tourism thing, but going forward, specific projects, are we talking about Bank of America Stadium? What should that money be used for?
Well, that's exactly what the law says. It has to be used to extend the ability for people to have great experiences of tourism inside of our city. So you think about Spectrum Arena and how we have to continue those upgrades. The world in sports is changing quickly, and we're going to have to work to keep up, and that money should be used for that purpose.
All right, back to transit for a second. We're sort of skipping around. If not a tourism tax, then we go back to the impasse we've had for years, and that's the one-cent sales tax to fund the projects. As you know, that requires the state's approval. Republicans in Raleigh have seemed skeptical, but maybe that's changing. Is it changing? I mean, they've said the words roads first is what the mobility plan needs to be. Any progress there?
I think that you said it very well. When we've had our first plan, it included a number of things that the legislature sees as not exactly really required for what we want to accomplish. When you look at 485 and you look at our transportation roads and things like that, they said, you know, this is something you ought to consider first. And we have done that. So we have a roads first segment of what we want to accomplish, but we also know that we want to be able to put commuter rail on our agenda so that we can move more people. You know, people say, well, you know, you've got the express lanes, you can do all of that. But I know, and you know, that if there's an accident anywhere, we want to be able to see people on a train driving straight through that without having to stop and be in traffic or in their commutes.
A lot of people agree with you and look at Charlotte and think, do we want more roads? Do we want more cars? Is that really the solution for a city like Charlotte?
I think that we want roads that work best, and we're going to have to look at technology a lot around how are roads built and what's necessary. It's not, you know, like the highway system where you're going to have tons and tons of, you know, road miles. But what do we need to do to make sure that people can transport themselves to our employment centers? And what's the best method? Is it mass transit? Is it bus rapid transit? Is it commuter rail? Or is it just a safe way of driving on our roads?
Ed Riggs recently said that he still hopes to get it on the ballot for next year. Do you think that's still a possibility?
I think that we need to, if we get the opportunity from the legislature to have a referendum, I think it'll take a little bit more time than a year, because if we're going to ask people to do this, we need to show them what we have committed to them to accomplish. So when we look at Charlotte's needs alone, much less the needs around the towns that we're serving, then everybody needs to say, these are the things that we're going to improve and you will see a difference. I think that's the way that we have maintained trust in our community to approve these kinds of bond referendums. So I believe that along with Charlotte and the towns, people will say, we are going to do these projects. We're going to do these things for roads, and we're going to do this for rail.
Let me pin you down a bit more. So when do you think it would be a likelihood that we could get something like this, the 1 cent sales referendum, on a ballot, if not next year?
I can't estimate what government works, but most people would tell you that if it takes a year in the private sector, it takes a little bit longer in the governmental sector.
I think that's a fair thing to say. You can't predict how government works. All right. Aside from transit, SOAR session is coming up in Raleigh on, I believe, April the 24th. What are the city's priorities outside of transit? I know the working relationship sometimes has been frustrating between Charlotte and Raleigh. I also know Tark Bakary was up there yesterday tweeting that he had newfound confidence. What are your legislative priorities as a city for state lawmakers?
Well, we've been very, very fortunate to have both the Speaker as well as the President of the Senate to talk with us and to continue to engage with us. It's always helpful to have Ed Riggs working with us in terms of what we want to do for mobility. I believe that our real efforts are going to continue to be around how do we move people around and how do we incur more economic development opportunities so that we can put our residents to work in a way that they can work with dignity and afford to live in Charlotte. Our council priorities are certainly around that same idea. We want to make sure people have a safe place to live, a decent house to be in, that they have a decent job, one that provides them dignity, and the way to move back and forth between that is we talk about commuting.
Still come on Flashpoint. Homicide surging in Charlotte in the first part of the year. Next.
Welcome back to Flashpoint.
The city of Charlotte continuing down a path of rising crime. Homicides up for the first part of the year. Teens now often both the suspects and the victims. And the mayor says it's going to take years to fix. We're getting ready for the Love and Life Festival, a brand new music festival taking over uptown. Lots of folks excited about it. I mean, you've got everybody from Post Malone, Stevie Nicks, a big outdoor event. But that also brings up the issue of recent big outdoor events at uptown at parks, Romier Bearden Park specifically. You had July 4th, the big melee that happened there. You had a shooting New Year's Eve in Romier Bearden. Are you confident in the security plans surrounding this upcoming festival?
You know, I'm confident in the efforts that CMPD will take in this area. When the announcement was first made about the outdoor music festival, Chief Jennings immediately started working with the with the group that's sponsoring it, as well as with the internal, how do we surveillance and have people be safe? So there will be a plan. It's not a plan that I'm sure he will not be disclosing the plan, I can tell you that. But I think that you'll see an increased presence of both people that are saying, how do we help you to make this festival great, but also how to make it safe for everyone to be there.
Preliminary crime data shows that homicides are up 36% in the first quarter of the year. Where's the disconnect between law enforcement and what's happening on the community level?
I don't think it's a disconnect with the law enforcement as much as it is a disconnect with the way the world is changing now and how people feel hopelessness and how people are perhaps experiencing mental health issues. This is an effort that every part of our community needs to participate in. We've been working on a lot of violence interruption programs. We're working with healthcare. We're working with our faith groups. We're talking to people that have had this experience and know how to deal with this. But I think the disconnect isn't just law enforcement. It's really something that I see across this country. I get a chance to talk with my fellow mayors, and every one of the major cities is experiencing this kind of increase in violent behavior. And we are fortunately not at the most crisis, but we are focused on whatever we can identify, and we're going to try it. We're just going to really work hard to work with our community leaders and those that are really interested in how do we change this. It may take a little bit of time. I kind of consider it like COVID. It was 5 years for us to kind of get to a place that we could say we are almost there, from changing from vaccinations to actually being healed. I don't know what the vaccination is right now for violence, especially in our youth. So we need to just figure it out and work towards a goal to change it.
The sheriff and chief we had on the show a few weeks ago, they're saying the issue of teen crime specifically comes down to resources. Take a listen.
All we do is release them back into the environment that we took them out of. We have to look at where can we get them back on track in programs, whether that means detention or mandatory programs that we have to put them in while they're waiting for their court date. So it's just a failure in the system that we're not taking care of our young people.
So failure in the system, is that on the city or is that also on the state as well?
Well, I believe that what the chief is referencing is the ideas that we had when we were talking about and had the ideas that maybe we were too harsh on our kids. And the age range for that has changed in some ways. And also, I think the chief is referencing those that are, doing things continuously, that they get arrested and then they leave and they continue their behavior. So what his focus is what do we change about that so that when we know that we have repeat offenses by individual kids that are, that don't know how to stop what they're doing, they're just continuously doing what they should not be doing, how do we have programs or how do we address that issue? And that's a part of the work that we're doing with our community.
I think it's probably 5 or 6 years ago, I asked you, what you thought the biggest issue in the city of Charlotte was, and you said affordable housing. And to your credit, you said it before a lot of other people were saying it, before I feel like we really got into the crunch that we've seen in the last couple of years. Do you see the problem getting better here when it comes to affordable housing?
Oh, absolutely. This past Monday, we heard about the expending the last amount of the two-year bond, the $50 million that we've invested in affordable housing. And we are producing these units. We're doing it in a way that we talk not just about rental housing and apartments, but home ownership and how do we maintain the houses. So we've got great partnerships with our housing development community, and they are helping us perform at the highest level. So I'm very pleased and very glad to be able to say Charlotte punches way above our weight on the affordable housing crisis that we're experiencing across the country.
The Biden campaign pumping significant resources into North Carolina. We've seen multiple visits recently. And we know that Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, is also crucial because Charlotte Democrats have been fairly or not criticized for not turning out enough in the last big election. As the city's top Democrat, that's what you are, What do you feel is your responsibility when it comes to getting more voters to the polls this fall?
Well, you know, I think that what we've got to do is both parties will do this. This is going to be a tight race for the president. It's going to be a tight race for our governor's office as well as our attorney general's office. So we all have an accountability to put our best foot forward to do this with integrity and good information and making sure that people understand that they are the most important part of this process. You know, we have to have people come out to vote. Because you can't say, well, I want to get this accomplished without them being participants in it. So I expect you'll see a lot of voter education coming out. I hope that we'll make it easy and safe for people to vote quickly and have early voting sites that work for us. So these are the kinds of things you have to start planning now for November, especially when we're talking about people that feel disconnected from the system. Voting is absolutely one of the most important rights that we have. And I'm hoping that every resident of Charlotte will make a decision to come out and vote, especially starting with early voting to the day that we close the polls.
It strikes me there are a lot of big issues in our country and in Charlotte. And there are the issues that Democrats want to talk about. And there's the issues that Republicans want to talk about. But how do you explain what seems like to be people so upset during a time of tremendous growth and progress?
Well, I wish that I had the crystal ball to figure that out, or I had the smarts to do it. But I think one of the things that I'm most proud about our own community is that if you look at the Charlotte City Council, we talk about those kinds of issues openly. We have our meetings, and we know that we have some things that we have to resolve.
Vi Lyles, the mayor of our fair city. Mayor, thanks for coming on and chatting with us. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you, Ben.
Duke Energy now pledging to do a better job after our investigation caught them overcharging some customers. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Duke Energy now pledging to do a better job communicating with its customers after WCNC Charlotte investigation, the power company overcharging some customers and impacted more than a third of its solar customers in South Carolina who pay monthly minimum bills. Nate Morbido is asking, where's the money?
You can't tell from the street, but solar panels largely power this Lake Wylie home and help Doug Wolf.
This is a Powerwall, Tesla Powerwall. It's a battery for the house.
Store the electricity he captures.
I have solar panels, I have a battery, I have a Tesla, I recycle, I want to help.
He's confident his efforts will pay off in many ways over time. But in the short term, Wolf says he's losing faith in Duke Energy.
It's hard to trust him at this point.
Not just because of billing errors, but also the way in which the utility responded when he raised questions.
I don't have words for how I feel about the walls that Duke Energy has put up between them and their customers.
Duke Energy solar customers who don't use that much electricity are billed a minimum monthly charge of $30. But if they produce more energy than they use, the company's own policy requires them to subtract that credit from the minimum charge. For a few months there, the math just didn't add up. Wolf discovered the issue earlier this year, which is tied to bills from 2023. But when Wolf repeatedly called Duke Energy,
they just kept saying, everything's right, you know, not a problem.
He says the utility repeatedly dismissed his concerns.
It was completely frustrating.
So he asked for our help.
We are here to help our customers. It's unfortunate that this customer had this experience, and we apologize for that. And we certainly have some opportunities to improve.
Duke Energy spokesperson Megan Miles told us the utility identified and fixed the error, which impacted about 800 customers in all, long before Wolf noticed it and made sure to adjust future bills accordingly, but never delivered that message to customers.
Shouldn't it be standard operating policy that if you find a mistake, to communicate that mistake when it happens to the customer?
Yes, certainly. The goal is for our bills to be accurate and to avoid confusion whenever possible.
Miles says Duke Energy routinely runs verification tests on bills for accuracy, understanding solar rates are complicated.
In fact, the utility recently identified another error that impacts an even smaller number of its South Carolina solar customers. Those people will likely receive a small credit and clear communication.
We are reaching out to those customers who were impacted by that.
An area for improvement moving forward.
I'm happy that they finally admitted to their mistakes.
After weeks of keeping Doug Wolf in the dark,
I'm kind of upset that it took this much effort to get them to do it.
Duke Energy has since talked to him directly and overcompensated his account for his trouble. Important steps in restoring the trust.
Check your bills every month.
Of a skeptical customer. Nate Morabito, WCNC Charlotte.
More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint, folks. Come interact with us on social media. Let us know what you thought. What did you think about what the mayor had to say? Maybe what you think we should cover in future episodes? Let us know. And as always, you can subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you get yours. And we'll see you back here next weekend.